Kyle Cacciadorian.
And you're listening to another episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily?
I think we need to catch people up because we've been doing this thing lately where we go a while between episodes.
I mean, there is a global pandemic still.
Arguably, that should make us
more likely to podcast. Yeah. It really should. We have no excuse but ourselves.
Literally, when this pandemic started, I was like, I am going to accomplish so much during this pandemic. Like, we're gonna podcast, and I'm going to do all this writing, and it's going to be amazing. None of that happened.
Well, actually, to be fair, you did do, yeah, out of those two examples, you did one of those things.
I think I meant more, like, writing for myself.
Oh, well, who has time for that?
Instead, what I have been up to for the past 9 months is having a baby. The baby's name is Book, and she will be introduced to the world sometime in late spring, early summer of 2021. And in case anyone didn't follow that, it's a book, not a baby.
Can we have a socially distanced book shower?
Oh my God, that sounds like so much fun. Is that when you stand on a balcony, you dump like books out off the balcony and shower people with books?
Yes. What do you get a newborn book?
A pre-order.
Oh, that was good.
So, yeah, I wrote a book. That's what I did with my pandemic. And please don't misunderstand me. It wasn't like the pandemic came and then I decided to write a book. It was already in process and I just got stuck writing it during the middle of a pandemic.
And I got a job shortly after the Tiger King era of the pandemic, and I've been pretty much working nonstop ever since.
Yeah, and have we mentioned that you're moving on the podcast?
I don't know, but in case we haven't, I'm moving.
Kyle's moving.
And this will probably be the last episode that I record from New York, but we probably should record a whole bunch before I go. While I'm still here, now that I'm saying that out loud. So the next time you hear my voice, I might be across the country, or I might not. But I'm moving next month.
There were no definites there, because we have no idea what's happening.
Well, I am moving next month.
Moving next month, but I meant with the podcast. God, I don't even know where you're going to be when we do the next one.
I'll have internet.
Yeah. But he is moving, can I say, to Seattle?
Yes, you can.
Okay, well, I just said it. So good.
We'll just keep it in there.
Or you can, like, bleep it out, and then everyone will be like, where?
Is there a city that's a curse word?
Yeah, so Kyle and I will now be across the country from one another. But the good news for all of you beautiful people who listen to us is that it actually doesn't really matter very much because except for maybe once or twice, I think, we have not recorded a podcast in the same room.
Yeah, it was exactly twice. And one of them we didn't even use. So we only ever use one.
Well, no, I thought we recorded one about the New York City Kids Project.
Yes.
Extremely fancy recorder setup that you bought.
Which we used completely wrong, by the way. But that's how we learned how to use it.
And then never used it again. So that's cool. And then the second one, I think, was an impromptu recording on my laptop in Virginia after I fell in the shower.
It was. You're right.
Which, by the way, if you want to laugh, you should really listen to the episode where I fell in the shower.
It says a lot about us that, you know, something like that happens to you, and our first thought immediately after get my butt up off the floor is, we should talk about what just happened and put it on the internet.
I mean, that was definitely one of those you cannot make this stuff up kind of situations. So, yeah. But other than that, I really don't think that anyone has to worry. I think if anything, there might be a brief hiatus while Kyle is settling in, but it's not like this podcast is going away. You don't raise a baby to 4 years old and then desert it.
No, not us. If anything, once I get settled in, the podcast will continue with somewhat more regularity than it has been lately, because you're almost finished with your, well, I don't want to jinx it, but you're almost finished with your book, right?
I mean, I am halfway through the acknowledgments, and that's the last thing I have to do, really. I mean, I have to do a couple of probably minor edits along the way, but everything else should be smoother sailing from here. And I know that Emily, a year from now, will listen back to this and laugh at herself for calling anything smooth sailing, but here we are.
Present Emily is not as wise, apparently, but wise enough to predict that. So,
oh, in case you're wondering, and I really can't remember, we probably have mentioned both the book and Seattle and your new job on the podcast before. But in case we haven't, my book is about disability and Kyle's job is related to disability. Who's surprised? No one.
This is me pretending to be who was surprised. I didn't say anything. Get it? Because nobody.
Oh, I got it. It's like those comments that are like all over the internet now. Like, no one. Me. Yeah. So, boy, we really just like pushed ourselves right into the disability hole and stayed there.
I didn't even do it on purpose. It just kind of happened.
Yeah. Well, you've been back and forth between work related to disability and work not related to disability, whereas I have been disability 24/7 since I graduated college. I mean, there's something to be said for having some separation between work and your personal identity and the entirety of your humanity. So I can actually see the merits of being a disabled person not working in the disability field.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I haven't made a big mistake at work yet. I'm going to virtually knock on wood because I don't want to make noise. But you know, having worked in this kind of space before, it hits different if your mistake, like it's, you know, it's like, but I'm supposed to know better. And it's like, but I am supposed to know better. Oh man.
Well, I mean, I've definitely made mistakes before. I've been ableist before and I've been called out on it before. And I was miserable when it happened, but I would argue that it's made me an overall better and more conscientious human being who needs to have the humility to admit that I'm still learning. And just because I have a disability doesn't mean I know everything about all disabilities. So, yeah, I mean, but it is complicated when your identity collides with your professional life in more ways than just like you are what you do for work. It's like, no, I really am.
No, yeah.
But then it used to be so nice when you were working at your job that was not related to disability and you and I would go to some of the events that they would host and I would be like, wow, this has nothing to do with anything that I know about. This is great.
All these rich white people and their fancy cheese plates.
Okay, but I really liked the cheese plate. I got yelled at.
Oh, yeah.
Being near the cheese plate.
We both did.
I was told that I hovered near the cheese plate too long.
Yeah, they were like, that was... So I never got scolded at the job that I just left ever because I was a good employee. But the one thing that they told me was that when Emily and myself go to events, we hover the cheese plate too much.
I gotta be honest, there wasn't really much else to do.
I mean, I regret nothing. If I ever go back to an event with those people, I will still hover around the cheese plate.
I like cheese.
Yeah, stop having such a good cheese plate if you don't want us to eat it.
Yeah, no, honestly, so my problem is when I do not know what to do with myself at an event, I stay by the food and eat it. If I know a bunch of people and I'm comfortable, food is like the last thing on my mind. If I don't know anyone, I'm like, I'm going to go buy that cheese plate.
There's like a radar in your head. It's like food, food, food.
It's just something to do because I feel awkward. And I can't talk to anyone if I have a mouthful of cheese.
Do you also like cheese?
That would honestly be my conversation starter. Like, it really.
That's a hell of an icebreaker.
Okay, I'm judging myself so hard right now. I actually, I don't know if it's that I don't like socializing or that I like cheese or a combination of both. I think it's both.
Is there a difference between those two statements? They sound exactly the same to me.
You're right. That was exactly the same.
So you go.
I don't have anything else to add to the cheese conversation, but I was going to say that I'm glad that we were able to catch people up a little bit on what we've been doing.
Definitely.
It's definitely been, as I'm sure it has been for everybody else, kind of a wild ride these past several months. It used to be like, oh, these past few weeks, these past couple of months. And now it's like, no, this started in March and it's the middle of August.
Yep. Sure did.
Oh my gosh. How's your emotional state?
If I'm talking strictly about my personal set, like my personal life and myself, it's fine. It's great. It's actually great. But if I'm talking about me in relation to the state of the world, I really still feel like the "this is fine" memes, where it's just like a dog sitting at a table and the whole apartment he's in is on fire and he's trying to tell himself that he's fine. Because in that brief second when he's not on fire yet, you know, he is fine. And that's what I mean. Right now, I am fine.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I feel like I'm lucky to say that I did fare relatively well so far. But again, it's also like you don't know the flames that are surrounding you.
Yep.
I feel like that needs a trigger warning because I'm triggering myself right now. No sarcasm. Like, I'm very serious.
Yeah, no, it's certainly raising my heartbeat as we speak.
So let's all take a deep breath.
What do you want to talk about today, Emily?
Now that we've caught up a little bit, I actually really want to talk about etiquette because actually I bothered Kyle for a quote for my book. And it was on etiquette. The whole book is not on etiquette, but I wanted a quote on etiquette. And I was like, who do I know who can talk to me about this? And originally, my thought was etiquette from the perspective of those awkward situations where you're not really sure what to do. Like you being on a crowded train and asking someone for a seat. But it sort of morphed into a more general conversation about etiquette. And now I think it's worth talking about because there's so much more to unpack there than I could ever fit in my book.
It's funny because when you asked me, I came to the realization that I've never actually thought about it, which in itself was strange to me, given that not only am I disabled, but the vast majority of people I know are also disabled. And it was a very hard question to ask because the very first thing I said to Emily was, well, why do we need special etiquette? Isn't the whole goal of our movement to be treated just like everybody else? But the more I thought about it, the more confusing it got because, yes, ultimately we want to be treated just like everybody else, but sometimes we can't do things like everybody else, and that requires conscious thought on the part of everybody else. And the quote is something that I can't remember that Emily made sound amazing, but it basically boiled down to, you know, you shouldn't overthink things, but perhaps being conscientious of someone else's needs is the right thing to do, even though ultimately you don't want to have to think about it. But because disability is so individualistic, it's probably better to think about it and act accordingly.
Yeah, honestly, no, what you said made me have to stop and think because I had sort of always had this notion about how if you overthink things, that's what makes it weird. But is there such a thing as underthinking? Because that can make it weird too.
Yeah, like if you don't think at all. Like, but that's usually when you underthink something, that's sort of where awkwardness can happen. I think of this GIF that I love. It's like the funniest thing I've ever seen. I don't know what this man was doing, but he was an archer without any arms. He used his feet to be an archer. And he hit a target, and it was like the perfect hit. It was from far away. It was hard. It was very difficult. And the judge like ran up to him and just did the handshake move, went to shake his hand, and the guy just looked at him and shrugged. And then the judge like gave him a friendly tap on the shoulder, because you could clearly see his brain short circuit, like, oh my God, I can't believe what I just did. And then he shook his foot. That's what underthinking gets you. And it makes me laugh every time. I've seen the thing like 100 times. It's so funny. But but also, like, that's something to learn from. I don't blame the man for doing the thing that he's done 100 times before to this guy. He's just treating him like everybody else. But it was only when he realized, oh, wait a second, this guy can't shake hands when you don't have hands, that the awkwardness set in. So perhaps if he thought about it for half a second before he did that, then that could have been avoided. But then again, had he done that, this amazing GIF that gives me pleasure and happiness every day would not exist. So perhaps this was for the best.
Well, it's actually really funny when you think about it also, because we are socialized to think that shaking hands is absolutely the proper etiquette. We're socialized to think that what you do when you meet someone or want to congratulate someone or just want to say hello to someone is you hold your hand out and you shake hands. And so, you know, we have to adjust our notion of what's proper etiquette. And that's hard because we're taught that stuff like that should be instinctual. Go in for that handshake, you know?
And people judge you for it too. That you were you taught that as a woman? Like, I know that's kind of a sexist question, but like as a man growing up and as a boy, like I was taught, you know, have a firm handshake, people will judge you. And I didn't get it until I became an adult and realized that people actually really do judge you for having like a weird handshake if you do have one.
I mean, I don't know that anybody has ever specifically told me that I should have a firm handshake, but I actually do have a firm handshake, and I've been told that I have one. And I think they say it almost as a matter of they're surprised because I'm a disabled woman.
When shaking hands becomes a thing again, which it never should, by the way, it's like objectively disgusting. I don't know how we went through millennia just doing that. We all should shake Emily's hands.
Ugh. I actually really don't like handshakes. They make me a little uncomfortable because I always find myself having to apologize. My hand is either sweaty and clammy, or it's cold because I've just been outside, or it's like wet because I was holding something with condensation. Handshakes are just utterly awkward to me.
And especially, like, I don't know if people do this to you because you're a woman and that's super sexy of me to say, but sometimes when I shake hands with a man, what they'll do is they'll like do the squeeze thing. And I don't know what that is. Like, that's some kind of weird power move or whatever. I don't squeeze, but I do if you squeeze. Because if you squeezing my hand, I'm like, no. I'm winning this. Like, I'm not going to let you crush my hand. I'm going to crush your hand. No, but it's stupid. It's like, what is this weird battle of attrition that I'm in with you? I just met you.
Well, it's that thing that Donald Trump was doing.
Oh, yeah, he does the yank.
Where he, like, grabbed your hand and, like, pulled it back.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This isn't about handshakes, but our point is that even things as mundane as a handshake, which you probably don't really think about in your day-to-day life, are affected when you're interacting with people with disabilities. It's very easy to say, treat us like everybody else. But it's kind of hard to do that when your needs are different.
Well, I would counter that a little bit with, I think you can treat us like everybody else by treating each one of us as an individual. Like, I think that we should be looking at everybody as an individual. I mean, there are non-disabled people who don't like handshakes or who are like averse to hugging or whatever. And I just think that, you know, if to treat everyone the same to me means to treat everyone with the notion that not everyone is the same. Is that way too paradoxical, or does it make sense?
No, I get it. We have to focus on the outcome and not the framework, right? We can't, if, you know, you can say, oh, I'm going to treat you all the same because I'm going to shake everyone's hand and I don't care whether or not you hate it. I'm treating everyone the same. Whether or not you hate it is irrelevant because I'm doing the same thing to everybody. But what we should be doing is saying something like, okay, how do I greet everybody, which is what the same is in this case, in a way that they're comfortable with? Now, I'm not saying that you have to like completely change how you personally decide that you greet people. But for example, it's not that weird to ask somebody if they would like a hug before you hug them. But some people, just like how some people reach out to shake hands, just like to just barrel into you and give you a hug. Perhaps that will change given the current climate that we're in right now. But perhaps it won't, and they'll still do that. That's strange to me, right?
Yeah. I've actually published on Rooted in Rights and also read a couple of blog posts by autistic people who are like, I love social distancing. More of this, please. And like, quite frankly, yeah, I really agree. I recognize that autistic people may specifically have sensory sensitivities that make it so that they prefer space apart from people. But yeah, I also don't want you too close to me. Like, one of my biggest pet peeves is people leaning on my chair or, you know, like I'm an armrest, unless I know them, like you can do whatever you want. And, you know, or people who are standing really, really close to me, but they're really, really tall. And so I have to crane my neck to look up at them. And it's just like, I want so much personal space. Please back up.
I think if I tell people, hey, you really should ask before you hug someone, I think that most people would understand that. I don't know if they'd change their view immediately, but I think they would understand what I'm getting at. But a wheelchair is kind of different, and I wish it wasn't, but it is. And I'm curious if you find it harder to convince people that your wheelchair is an extension of you. Like when someone touches your chair, I know you say like, don't touch me. And I feel like that's harder for people to understand. Everyone knows what don't touch me means, but to them, that's an object. Whereas to you, it's an extension of you. Now I agree that it is. Like, I'm not trying to play devil's advocate. But I'm asking you, like, as a woman who uses a wheelchair, like, do you find that that's kind of difficult to convey to people, given the right context? Like, obviously, I'm not asking you to, like, yell at people in the train station and give them a lecture, like, while you're trying to go somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I've taken two subtle cues at this point. Like, if someone is resting on me, I'll, like, move or back up or reposition myself, you know, because I don't really know what else to do. But, yeah, I mean, I'm big into personal space, but on the flip side of that, and this isn't exactly etiquette, but there was a really long time where, and I don't quite know how to articulate this, but I used to think about how people would meet someone at a bar who they were interested in, and there would be flirtations and, you know, body language and touch. And I used to think that my wheelchair was not even so much like a force field in the sense of like repelling people because they weren't interested in a woman in a wheelchair, but more like it was a physical barrier that would make people think that they could not have access to touch me. And therefore, in the same way that you can watch people's body language as they get closer and closer at a bar, like, I felt like I had a box around me, you know? And the only time people wanted to violate my space and enter the box was in some sort of patronizing or rude way.
Yeah, so see, that's really interesting to me. Because if somebody were to come up to you, I'm not going to say, like, flirt with your wheelchair, but imagine you're at a bar and someone comes up to you and flirts with you. Off-putting or not, I feel like that's, I use this term very loosely, better than somebody who uses your wheelchair as like a shoulder rest, because at least in the first example, they are treating you like how they would a patron at a bar, right? Where the force field, you know, is there, but they're ignoring it because they recognize that you're a person and not just a cyborg or a machine.
Right, exactly. I'm also thinking about hugging from your perspective, because I know that you're a little wobbly, so someone coming full force at you isn't great either.
It's really not, and I don't particularly like, I mean, that's not true, I love hugs, but I don't particularly like hugs from strangers.
Do you but like it doesn't warm take, hugs, like Olaf?
I do. Like, it doesn't take much. Like, after you say hello and tell me what your name is, I'll hug you, but not at first. It's not that hard. Like, it's just not a first greeting for me. But yeah, from a practically physical standpoint, don't hug me unless I know you're going to. It's not that I don't appreciate surprises. It's just, it'll probably knock me over and then we'll both feel bad. Except I shouldn't feel bad, but I do anyway.
Yeah, no, not your fault. Someone just like hug attacked you. But it's so funny. You have a very distinct way of hugging me. And I think this may be a thing that you do with all wheelchair users who are shorter than you, where I don't know that you can necessarily do the like bend and lean and hug. So you sort of do this like, and maybe this is just me because we're like best friends. You do this like smash my face into your chest hug.
Oh, that's a, okay. Yes. The answer is yes. I'm very short for people who don't know me. I'm like 5'3", but most wheelchair users are shorter than me, even when they're not, because they use wheelchairs. And so, and couple that with, it's hard for me to like do that bend and bow thing. Right. So yeah, I do hug wheelchair users differently, but I hug you differentlier.
I totally get it. Yeah, no, like full face smash.
Yeah, yeah. I
like
don't
my glasses are dirty after I hug you.
Yeah, I don't do that to everybody.
But
yeah, I do hug wheelchair users differently. It's weird. Okay, this is strange. It's easier for me to hug a wheelchair user than somebody who's standing up.
No, I totally get that.
A wheelchair has weight to it, and a person doesn't really.
I actually strongly object to hugging a lot of standing up people because they do this really awkward one-armed situation where my face ends up in their armpit or on their boob. And it's like, if you can bend over, why are you not bending over? You're making this really awkward for me.
See, but I feel like that's a thing with like, I'm sure a wheelchair makes it worse, but I agree with that. I think if you're someone who's going to half-ass a hug, don't. Just shake my hand. If I'm going to hug you, I'm going to hug you like I like you, because if I'm gonna hug you, I do like you. So just
wow,
like,
that's such great logic. Yeah.
No, seriously. But like, commit to it though. There's no, I hate side hugs. Side hugs are like the worst thing.
I can't decide if this is more a conversation about etiquette or about like personal space or handshakes or hugging or maybe all three.
I think the disability kind of makes it different though. Even if I say that it's only different because of the equipment that we use. Which I wouldn't. I would say it's more than that. But like, even something as small as your wheelchair in that example makes things like greetings different. Like, what if you're in a building that's not wheelchair accessible but does have a wheelchair accessible entrance, and the person you're meeting there greets you in the accessible lobby, and then you go in the elevator and you get to the door, and oh no, it's like not wide enough. Now it's really weird, right? No amount of handshakes and hugging is going to make that okay at all. So,
well, yeah, then you're just in an awkward situation.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why. Like, that's just plain.
But weird. I get where you're coming from. I mean, exchanging pleasantries isn't going to fix an awkward situation.
But it's also hard because I find it, and this is, I'm a person with a disability. I have zero, like, I don't mind asking slightly awkward questions or like, in order to make sure your needs are met. Like, I've done that my whole life. But even I would struggle with somebody whose disability that I either don't know or don't know about. So, like, because I'm knowledgeable, if I ask you, what is your disability? The reason I'm asking is because I generally know, once I hear it, how to accommodate you.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
But if you have a disability that I've never heard of, or if you need something that either I'm unfamiliar with or you need something in a way that I'm unfamiliar with it, instinctually what I want to do is like ask you more questions, even like before helping you, which is totally not the right thing to do. But I have to like fight myself. Because, like,
no, maybe it is the right thing to do, though. I mean, it's so hard because, you know, it's considered poor etiquette in and of itself to, like, pepper people with questions about their disability. But on the other hand, if somebody asks me valid questions about how they can help or accommodate me, I don't mind. That's really a lot different than someone coming up and being like, can you have sex? You know, like, very different.
Well, I see, but that speaks to a larger issue. And I know this is something we've talked about, like, ad nauseum, but I don't know what it is about having a disability that makes it so that a person's curiosity about another person overrides being polite and having etiquette. But for someone in a wheelchair, they don't care. They just go up to you and just, you know, it's something about having four wheels that just makes every social rule that they've ever learned not matter anymore. And I don't understand why that is. And it's not even just the wheelchair, because I get it too, but I've also been with you enough to know that a wheelchair is like, you may as well be wearing a sign that says, ask me about my vagina. Or whatever, right?
Oh, and then what's the movie where the guy is in the hot dog costume and it's like, ask me about my wiener.
Oh my God, what was that? It's like a Seth Rogen movie.
It actually probably definitely is. But anyway, wow, that was really cultured of me. Yeah, etiquette is such a funny thing. And we are really socialized to think that it's supposed to be instinctual, but I actually think we'd all do better if we took a beat and thought about it a little bit.
But, like, I guess that's really the crux of it for me, right? It's like, what about having a disability makes it not matter to you? Not you, the people doing it. Like, why is it okay?
Oh, you mean, like, not the person who has the disability, but what is it about non-disabled people thinking that they can just get away with whatever they want?
Yeah. Like, I honestly want to know, like, if there's a reason that we as a people, as a group of people don't know about, I mean, by God, please tell us so we can fix it. Not that it's our problem to fix, but
I was going to say, fix yourselves, people. Get it together. Yeah, I know. Look, I get it. Etiquette in and of itself is like a formal thing and it feels awkward and it feels weird, but like, just be chill.
I'm really glad you said that because I've also, I mean, we like to make fun of people who ask us really blatantly personal questions, but those people, to me, are less annoying than the people who are like, listen, if you need anything, and I mean anything, anything at all, just you ask me, okay? I don't care if I'm talking to someone. I don't care if I'm on the other side of the room. You interrupt what I'm saying, and you come up to me, and you ask me for help. I am your person. I am here to help you, you, you. And, you know, they just ham it in like they're your little servant that exists while you're in the room with them to do anything at all that you ask for. And, like, those people annoy me so much worse because at least the people who ask me blatantly personal questions can see I'm a person. They don't care that I'm a person. They don't care that, like, about, like, privacy, but they get it. But when it's somebody who's, like, throwing themselves at me, but not in a flirtatious way, but rather in a personal help way, I am as off-put as I am with someone who's flirting with me that I'm not into. It's like, get away from me. I do not like this.
That is so funny. I don't think I've ever been able to articulate that. But yeah, the over-offerers of help, you know, the people who ask you 25 times, even though you said no thank you the first 24 times. And, you know, it's like, I promise I am gonna tell you if I need help. Like, I really will. And there have also, I don't know if you've done this at all, but there have been times where people have offered to help me so many times that I literally just take them up on it because I would rather they stop asking me. Like, have I ever talked about, I mean, we've been doing this podcast for so long, like, I can't remember what stories I've told anymore, but I was on a business trip to DC and there were these two old white dudes who were following me. You know, they saw me heading in a certain direction and I was rolling a suitcase alongside me and I very clearly had it handled. And they were like, can we help you? Where are you going? Let us help you. Can we help you? Where are you going? Let us help you. Like, on repeat. And so I was scared because I was like, I do not want you to help me with my suitcase all the way to my hotel. Like, I don't want you knowing where I'm staying. So I finally let them roll it. And then I made up, I think I'm pretty sure I like made up where I was going. And
just in case they offered.
Yeah, no, I literally like threw them off and you know, I was like, oh, okay, I'm good from here. Like,
and the worst part about that is that when they realized that they got duped, like had they like went to where you told them to go, their first thought probably wouldn't be, oh man, that person told us a fake address because we were being creepy. Their first thought is that poor crippled girl doesn't know where she's going.
Yeah, I mean, I just really like, you offer one too many times and you go from being like a thoughtful person to like a please get away from me right now before I, you know, call for help person.
Yeah. And this is something we have talked on the show before. I talked about on the show before, but like if you dare to show even an ounce of resistance, all of a sudden you are the world's rudest person.
That is so true.
And that makes me angry because it's like, oh, okay. If you know what is perceived as rude, then I know you know how to behave like a person. So that means that you know that what you're doing is annoying.
I love the huffy people who are like, ugh, I was just trying to help. But then, okay, here's the other thing that's really funny is sometimes I get annoyed when I very visibly need help and nobody helps me. The flip side of that is like, come on, you see me struggling. You're right there. Open the door.
I'm in a wheelchair.
Like, you saw me drop my suitcase. Pick it up.
It's the one day a year I get to pull this cart and no one's doing anything.
Yeah, or like, I cannot reach the napkins at the restaurant. Please help. Like, I swear. If you really see me struggling, like, come on.
You're not, like, hesitant to ask somebody for help, are you?
No, I actually totally will ask for help, but I usually kind of hope that someone will just pick up on the fact that I need it and do it for me. So, yeah, I have total double standards, but whatever.
But to add to that even further, when you wish somebody would help you and then they do, and, like, the stars align, and it's just, like, God himself sent a helper out just to help you pick something up off the floor, is just, like, yes. My prayers have been answered.
Yeah, but I am also the type of person who would rather struggle mightily sometimes than ask for help, too. It depends on the day. Like, my big thing, and this was obviously pre-pandemic, was, you know, when I would travel for work and I would have so many bags. And sometimes I would just, like, fight with them and try to get them all in and out of the hotel room myself rather than dare to ask for help. And now I've finally realized, like, there's a bellhop whose job it is to assist you with luggage. Ask for help.
And not only that, it's his job to help all the people that are way more able-bodied than you and also help you. So, like, if these people have no problem asking this guy to haul their crap, so should you, dang it.
Right, but it's always a point of pride for me. Although I have to say, so the one thing that I really love about a bellman helping me to my room and getting my bags off my chair is almost, I would say almost 100% of the time, they always say, if you need anything, my name is so-and-so, and you just call down for help, and I'll come up and help you, okay? And I'm like, thanks, friend! It is always, like, the doorman of a hotel or the bellhop or whatever the case may be. They're just so kind. Like, I remember I stayed in a Marriott once for about a week, and me and the doorman were best friends by the time I left because he just wanted to, like, make sure I was okay and look after me. And, like, that's the kind of help I don't mind.
Right. Just a watchful eye. And the important part, though, is the ask. It's the offer, and then they let you sit with it. You can decide to ask them for help or not. You can decide you need them or you don't.
Right, but it wasn't like 27 times. It was just like, I'm here if you need me, and I'm like, thank you. Like, that's really nice.
Yeah, because they're letting you make the decision as opposed to forcing it on you.
Yeah, look, I mean, honestly, I feel like non-disabled people got to be really confused by disabled people. I get it. So, because there's a lot of rules here, but I hope we can demystify and debunk some of them. But one never knows in this world. And I guess ultimately I value kindness. That's probably my key takeaway, actually, is that I value kindness. But the thing is that kindness doesn't always look like offers of help. Kindness sometimes looks like knowing when to offer help and when not to. Do you have a final takeaway?
If you want to help a disabled person, before you do, ask yourself, would I think this weird if I were doing it to me? And if the answer is yes, don't do it that way.
Well, that's it. Brilliant.
I think that that disabled people are just people. And I know like that's our whole point of the show. But when it comes to treating us kindly, just treat us kindly. Like most of us will be very helpful back in our specific needs in a way that helps both of us. And so just kind of follow our lead.
Take our cues. Whew, this has been an adventure talking about etiquette. How are we feeling now? Do we feel like we've covered our bases? Do we feel good? It's been a while since we podcast, so.
I think so.
I'm glad we talked that out.
I feel like a lot of people are going to have more questions than answers, apparently, because, like, especially when we said, oh, sometimes we love it. But just know, as confused as you are, it's just as confusing to us.
We're all just trying to get through this thing called life. Oh, that's so cheesy. Wow, I hate myself for saying that.
This has been another quarantined episode of The Accessible Stall. I am Kyle.
I'm Emily.
She's okay.
I am okay. Oh, and wear a mask. Wash your hands.
You look great today. Your smile is still very pretty, despite it being under your mask that you're definitely wearing.
It's radiant. You are radiant. And if you're wearing a mask and washing your hands and social distancing, you are especially radiant.
You are the reason that we're going to be able to go do stuff soon.
Good night, everybody.
Find us at patreon.com/theaccessiblestall. Just $1 a month means that every current and future episode of The Accessible Stall remains accessible. Thank you.
And it really is. It really is.
All of our episodes are accessible now, thanks to people like you.
Love you. Bye.